This is Andrew Black, and it's time for the Enchanted Outdoor Show, a show where nature, culture, and spirituality meet. Each episode, we dive into the stories that connect us to the land, how we care for it, how it shapes who we are, and how it inspires something deeper in all of us. This isn't just about being outside. It's about finding meaning in the world around us and learning how to protect it together. The Enchanted Outdoor Show, where wonder meets purpose. Good morning. Thank you all for tuning in to the Enchanted Outdoor Show. Hope everyone's coming off of a great Mother's Day weekend. I tell you what, it's been a whirlwind of a week for me. I had a chance to fly to Washington, D.C. last week. I was asked by Congressman Gabe Vasquez to do the opening invocation and opening prayer for the new Public Lands Caucus in Washington, D.C. So I flew all the way to D.C. to deliver a few minutes of deep prayer over the nation's capital. And I'll tell you what, it's a really amazing caucus that Congressman Gabe Vasquez has pulled together. It's bipartisan. He's got Ryan Zinke from Montana with him and another Congressman Edwards as well. And they are doing a fantastic job of trying to come together to protect America's public lands. And so I spent a day out there in Washington, D.C. doing the opening prayer and meeting with Congressman Vasquez and also doing what I can to support America's public lands, water, and wildlife. And so it was an incredible opportunity to go out there and pray over the nation's capital, but also a chance to lift up the importance of public lands. And many of you may not know that there's movements in Washington, D.C. around the reconciliation bill, and an amendment was proposed to try to sell off America's public lands. And so this is an incredibly important issue. I know as New Mexicans, you know, we're a very public land heavy state. You know, we're the land of enchantment, and what is the land of enchantment without our land? And so public lands are really critical to who we are as a people, to our cultures, to our histories, to our traditions, and our identities. But it's also really critical to, you know, folks who, you know, are tied in land-based cultures, right? Whether that's hunting and fishing or, you know, traditional herb gathering or firewood gathering. And so our public lands are so important, not only to who we are, but they help us, you know, function as a people and are part of what we gain so much great joy and recreation out of. And so obviously it's incredibly concerning that there's a movement around trying to sell off these public lands and privatize them and sell them off to the highest bidders. And so we're working as part of a bigger movement and coalition and group to try to protect America's public lands. And then coming back from D.C., I had a chance to celebrate my wife, Jen, and Mother's Day with our daughter, Brooke, by going down to El Paso and going down and watching a bunch of El Paso Chihuahua baseball games, which is a great field if folks haven't been down there. It's an amazing place to watch baseball. And at the same time, you know, a chance to celebrate her as a mother and just do amazing work in kind of honoring her and spending time with my daughter watching baseball. So we've been traveling not only all over the state of New Mexico and heading into El Paso right there on the southern border, but also obviously to Washington, D.C. this week. But with that said, you know, we have a really amazing guest today. And this guest is going to take us all over the state of New Mexico, from Chaco Canyon to Pecos Pueblo to the Caja del Rio to Jemez Pueblo and far beyond. And I, of course, want to welcome, you know, a good friend of mine, Joseph Brophy Toledo. Brophy is a traditional leader, a medicine man, and a healer from Jemez Pueblo. He's also a tribal cultural advisor to the Flower Hill Institute and, of course, to Earth Keepers 360, who sponsors this show. Brophy and I first met over 15 years ago when we traveled with 40 other spiritual leaders, and it was literally nuns and rabbis and tribal leaders all traveling together from all four corner states to try to protect Bears Ears National Monument and work with tribal leaders over in Bears Ears in Utah. Over the past decade, Brophy's been one of my favorite people to talk to, and you know, I've gotten to know his daughter Rayanne and his wife Georgia, and they've become a true family to us. Brophy is, I'm honored to have him as a godfather to my daughter Brooke, but of course want to welcome you, Brophy, to the studio today.
Thank you.
Let's start with your origins. Your full name is Joseph Brophy Toledo, but most people call you Brophy. That's a pretty unique name. Tell me how you got that name.
Oh yeah, you know, I love to use that name Brophy because that's the only Brophy that's around. I know it's a last name for other people, but the way I got my name was my dad was in World War II and fought the wars, and he learned all heavy equipment out there. When he came back, he started working with heavy equipment. He started building Answer. And when Answer was coming in, a man by the name of William D. Brophy, who was a top lawyer for our lands with natives, came to be, and he bought that piece of land in the petroglyphs. And he was the first house there. So my dad, when he was building the road, this William D. Brophy asked my dad if he could build him a road to his house, and he did. So as he was building, my mom had came to the premises, and when William D. Brophy saw my mom, she was pregnant. So William D. Brophy told my mom, if he's a boy, you name him Brophy. And man, you know, that was an honor. So I always loved this name, Brophy, because I'm the only one that's named Brophy. And that's where I got my name. It came out of the petroglyphs. So now they're the Petroglyphs National Park is always interesting in what I have to say about the land and how I knew William D. Brophy, because that is the house that they're housing in where the Park Service is stationed at, is William D. Brophy's house.
So at Petroglyph National Monument in Albuquerque. Yes. That's a really interesting story. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and your dad was out there building roads and kind of along Unser Boulevard and all that as well.
Yeah, and you know, that Juan Thibault, the man that used to work with my dad was named Frank Toledo too. And he was the one that was telling me that road, Juan Thibault, really means Juan Tabu. And what Juan Tabu means is Juan the Clown. Because my dad was a clown. Mm. And I was trying to look up where that name came from. And even the roads over there didn't know where this name came from, but I need to talk to those guys next. So
he's a clown in some of your ceremonies and dances.
Yeah.
Interesting ties. Well, there you go. All these different street names and places and origins.
Yeah.
So, you know, we heard a little bit about your origin story and your name, but I'm hoping you can talk about your connections to Pecos Pueblo, how that ties to you as a person, and how your people came to Pecos Pueblo and what the ties are there.
Yes, you know, in our migration, we always talk about our migration, and we always say we came from the north, and as we were coming, all Pueblo people were together on this migration route. So we ended up at Mesa Verde. From Mesa Verde, we ended up at Chaco, and from Chaco, it became like a place where all these disturbances start growing. Everybody sort of got power hungry. So once they went back to Mesa Verde, the tribes started going. So the northern people were the first people that left the area. And along with them was Pecos that went. So when they ended up to a place where they said they were going to go, and the whole migration departing from Mesa Verde was all because of agriculture, and they were looking for water. And where they were looking for water, they were looking for land for planting. And so Pecos got to Pecos area, and that's where they ended up. And my ancestral blood comes from Pecos because my great-great-grandma was the youngest that migrated to Jemez way back in the early 1800s. So when they came, they brought along, at that time, our sovereign powers have already been given. So the Pecos governors came along, and the Saint Persingula came with them to Jemez, and they got accepted because our linguistic partners were Jemez and Pecos. Pecos were talking our same Toa language, so we understood each other, and that's how they knew where Jemez was, so that's where they came. And today, their whole ancestral lands, along with their traditional cultural ways, all came to Jemez, and today we still own that. So Pecos is very important to us because our emergence ties do tie into Pecos Pueblo along that. You know, Caja del Rio is another very important place because a lot of the emergence ceremonies were held at Caja del Rio. So those tie-ins are very important, you know, like what Andrew was saying with public lands, you know, and we need to keep them, you know, really, really into our traditional calendars and the way we use part of those lands, you know, and we need to protect them because that's part of me, that's part of us, and public lands belong to the people, you know. It shouldn't go into the hands of private owners because public lands is where it's all at, because Caja del Rio is very important because it has a lot of storybooks written on all the walls that are there. So it is a very important part of our educational system with our youth.
Mm. So what you're saying, Brophy, is that your people went from Mesa Verde to Chaco Canyon and then kind of from both those areas over to settle into Pecos. And
yes.
Ultimately, with challenges and troubles and issues, the Pecos people migrated to Jemez Pueblo and were accepted in by Jemez Pueblo.
Yes. So when they were in Pickles, I know that Tsuki is the right next door. So Tsuki and Pickles were sister tribes. They were saying because a lot of our the traditional songs from the Pickles still has that Tewa language in there with a lot of their emergent ceremonies. So it was really like a brother sisterhood place, and they understood because the way Tsuki tells me, because my blood comes from Tsuki too. So they were telling me that Pecos used to talk Tewa way before. Mm. So I mean, it's very close.
It's really interesting that you say that, because I think a lot of people in the Southwest and certainly New Mexicans don't always necessarily see those ties between the landscapes of, you know, Chaco Canyon and Mesa Verde to Pecos Pueblo across the Caja del Rio, right?
Yes.
Into Jemez Pueblo, right? Mm-hmm. And how all of those lands are interconnected and they're one to you all as a people.
Yes. Yes. Because, you know, those traditional trail systems that are still there are still known by our people, because a lot of the migrations are still being out the same way from Jemez to Pecos when they're going to do their emergent ceremonies. Just like Terrell Cave, you know, it's a very important place because that's one point where, you know, where Earth people came from down below. And then when you go into Terrell Cave, that's where he takes you way deep in there, man. So a lot of the tie downs that are the grounded tie downs are in there at Torero.
That's interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the Torero area. So, you know, a lot of folks in this community have heard about a mining proposal, the Torero mine. In April 2019, Comexico, which is a subsidiary of the Australian mining company of New World Cobalt, acquired 20 federal mining claims near Torero, New Mexico, which is kind of up there in the Upper Pecos watershed. And it would impact up to 400 acres of mining. Obviously, the area is surrounded by the Pecos National Forest, lots of sacred areas for you and your people historically. And then the idea is that the company wants to start prospect mining for gold, copper, zinc. It's obviously a very controversial project in our community. You know, there was historic mining in the Upper Pecos that left a lot of contamination, killed over nearly 100,000 fish in the Pecos River and watershed, impacting lots of wildlife and leaving, of course, a big mess for taxpayers to clean up. So, you know, Brophy, from your perspective, and, you know, kind of speaking from that perspective of your earliest ancestors, you know, can you talk about some of your concerns and the tribal concerns around this mine and why, where you're standing on that issue?
You know, as Earth people, you know, our job is to take care of Mother Earth, not to destroy or not take any part of what belongs to her, because for those reasons, the land was set to be the way it's set, because as Earth people, we are all part of those minerals. You know, our ancestral ties are everything that Mother Earth owns is part of you. So a lot of these disturbances, when the mining people came in, they drilled a lot of those lands, and it got to our waters, you know, our groundwaters, you know, even the waters that are still oozing out from a lot of the land. You know, it's very important, you know, that we have our legislatures, our representatives, you know, like with Andrew when he went to D.C. and spoke about public lands. You know, I had Teresa Ledger Fernandez and me hiked up to Jones Peak just to look at a lot of the disturbances that they left behind. And I have never been there, but this was the first time with Ledger when we went up there. And I saw what they left. And all the poisons that they oozed out are still laying there. And they're still washing down to the Santa Fe Reservoir, you know. And so it's going on both sides. It's going on Santa Fe side and it's going on Pecos side. So a lot of the lands that are these dirty waters that are coming down is hitting a lot of our waters that flow. So it does cause a lot of disturbances because we depend on water. You know, we're agricultural people, and Pecos, we call the river Tongo Baggy, and Tongo Baggy means corn cup river, because a lot of the planting was done on those waters, and those that at that time, you know, that was our dependency with foods. You know, we depended on everything that we grew on the land, because food as medicine is what was grown, along with all the herbs that are surrounding that fat off those waters. Now these contaminated waters are coming down. Now look what he's doing to a lot of our dependent medicinal plants that we depend on. You know, they're contaminated now, and now we're studying plants. Are they still good? Are they still the same? Does he still hold the same potency? Because water has memory. And those memories that were there at that time when my ancestors were there, it was all good. It was all pure. But now when you see all that, you know, a lot of these contaminants are into the waters now, because like Andrew was saying, you killed a lot of fish before with what they left. Because once they do mining, they just up and leave and they don't clean up. And we've seen it. And Fernandez saw all that. So I hope that, you know, that our legislatures really understand the value of land, because it is the land of enchantment. New Mexico is the land of enchantment, because as a person I am, we are always chanting in my pueblo. And that's where all our pueblo people stand on, man. That's why they call it the land of enchantment, because even with a lot of our religious ceremonies that we do, you know, like with Andrew with this Presbyterian church, they're always chanting and unite that, you know, that heartbeat all comes into that one rhythm that we all belong to. And that's coming from our one God, you know, that gives us all these energies to take care of Mother Earth.
That's so interesting that you say, Brophy. I mean, I love that idea of that the water carries memory. Right. And that you're right, that it'll carry the memory of the past, whether it's contamination that it's carrying as runoff right into the rivers. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that joins the fish, that joins the aquatic insects, the invertebrates. And that's such an interesting thing to think about from a sacred spiritual perspective. Right. Water's so important in many of the ceremonies you all do. From my perspective as a Presbyterian minister, baptism, right, is one of the really mm-hmm. important sacraments in the Christian faith. You have rites of purification in the Jewish faith. And obviously, what does that mean when the waters are dirty and contaminated? And what does that mean spiritually and from a more sacred perspective? I think is a really good, important kind of practical, but also sociological, theological question that we have to start asking ourselves. What are we doing to Mother Earth? And what does that mean to our more sacred ceremonies mm-hmm. when these places are contaminated and the waters are no longer usable in those more ritualistic ways? You know, Brophy, you mentioned a little bit that Senator Lujan, Representative Ledger Fernandez and Representative Stansberry have some legislation to protect the Pecos, that they're looking to do a mining withdrawal. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what your hopes are with that?
You know, it is very important that all these permanent protections do play, because it'll cause a lot of easements with a lot of our Pueblo world, because they have seen what my Pueblo has done way before, because I was a Pecos governor in 1993 and I did ethnographic studies at that time. Today, we're revising the ethnographic studies on what was done in 1993, and a lot of our public lands, the value behind the sacred sites, the PowerPoint areas is what I call them. The PowerPoint areas is where we go and we do our prayers, we do ceremonies, we do a lot of different things to the PowerPoint areas. And those sacred sites are always very important, because it needs to be in that safe hands. Because when you go out there, a lot of it, you know, a lot of these safe lands we used to call is being protected by somebody else, like BLM, you know, Forest Service. And a lot of times we have to ask permission to go into our sacred areas. And I'm telling them, no way, we shouldn't be asking anything like that. So hopefully our legislatures start understanding this part of the values of why it's important to my people and to all Native Puebloans and a lot of our earth people surrounding the area, because we're not the only ones that vacate that area. We have the all the colors, you know. I talk about the yellow people, white people, red people, black people in unification that need to protect permanent protections for Mother Earth. That way everybody has that comfort, because they call USA the land of the free. But those quotes are kind of changing today, and it's creating a staticky world. You know, it's getting staticky, more staticky, because Earth people, you know, we're always afraid of each other now, because you don't belong this land or whatever they're going to come from. But as Earth people, you know, we got this one world that we all live in. We got that one sun, one moon. We all drink the same water and we breathe the same air. We got to protect that all at the same time. And I hope our legislatures do understand that part for the values that we're talking about.
Well, you know, what you bring up is so interesting because I think in, you know, in New Mexico and across the country, we talk a lot about public lands, but public lands are ancestral lands, right? These are sacred lands to indigenous people all over the country, all over the world. But also at the same time, you know, ties to some of the Spanish history, right? Whether we're talking about the El Camino Real on the Caja del Rio or tribal sacred sites like the petroglyphs at La Cienaguilla, right? Mm-hmm. That if you lose these areas, you're not just losing a sense of landscape, right? You're losing so much more.
Yes. Yes. You know, what we're losing at this time is, you know, how diversion is building now. You know, we're getting diverted. And this diversion was never even in our thoughts when they first came, because I talk about a lot of the first people that came, you know, because when we were living on the lands, they never said that we're never going to be disturbed by anybody else, any kind of Earth people. Instead, when they started coming, they said, oh, these are the people they were talking about that were going to come. So how do we accept them? So the first language that we started speaking other than Toa was Spanish, because they were the first people that first came into our area. And the acceptance on how they agreed with a lot of stuff was the intercultural exchanges that they did. You know, cross-culturally, that we depend on each other because they needed the same help that we needed. So a lot of our warfares were doing the same, man. They were getting attacked. We were getting attacked. But the teaming up really built that solitude that, hey, we need to take care of our lands. And these people that are coming in, how do we greet them? How do we make peace with them? That way we don't go through this warfare. And they talked about it together, and they all understood it together. A lot of our talks back home is where a lot of the Spanish people that lived around in our area came into our war parties. Mm. And they were accepted. And they said that a lot of these older people that were Spanish knew our war songs. So that's how it all came in. Just like, you know, in our migration, we talk about the Mayans, the Aztecs. Those guys know about Chaco. And to even today, in a lot of our ceremonial ways, with the warrior ceremonies, we're still singing the songs that those Aztecs were singing.
Well, that's one of the things that I think is so interesting about you, Brophy, is that, you know, you honor the diversity of different cultures, the histories, traditions, but you come back to that place of that everybody is an Earth person. Mm-hmm. And everybody is connected and comes from the Earth. And that's the common ground that we must not lose sight of in a highly divided society, right?
Yes.
That's so important. You know, and one of the things, obviously, I think that's a connection for a lot of New Mexicans, too, is this kind of connection to hunting and fishing. You know, can you talk a little bit? I'm obviously a fly fishing guy, you know, is, you know, rooted in the land here growing up. Love the rivers, love to commune with the fish. But, you know, I was wondering if you could talk a little bit about some of the indigenous connections you have to hunting and fishing and you know, how those things kind of transcend cultures and history and traditions.
Yes, you know, as Earth people, you know, I love talking about animals, the four-legged, the wing, the fin, the microbes, the microinvertebrates, the pollinators, bugs, insects, you know, because they're the ones that taught Earth people about life that's on the land, you know, because they were the first ones that were roaming. And how did they survive, you know? And that's what we started looking at, because animals were our teachers. You know, I love talking about these stories, because when God created the world, he created everything that was on there. And then he said, I can't live in the dark. So he created the sun and the moon. Then he looked down and he said, oh, something's missing down there. And then he said, who's going to take care of my world? So he designed I'm going to create a two-legged. So when he was creating a two-legged, the animals found out what God was creating. The animals got together and they said, you know who God's creating? And they said, who? It's a two-legged. And what the animals described was, they're the ones that are going to destroy our land. And it's so true. Look where we're at today, you know, because we created all the borders. We created their homelands. We were building on their homeland. And look where animals are at today, you know. They have to cross roads where they're getting hit. So we have to take care of them because we're their voice today. But animals were our teachers. And you know, like all Earth people were born naked until we started seeing the four-legged, and they were walking through snow and all this. And they said, hey, if that animal can walk through that snow, maybe we can wear what that animal's wearing. And that's where the first clothing came from, was we were taught by animals. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing was, if we can eat that animal, we can eat what that animal ate. That's where herbs came to be. Mm. So a lot of the teachings that came out from that did really open up our minds for the exception that Mother Earth is life, just like the waters that are in there with the fish. You know, when fish and everything else in the water start dying, the dependency starts dying. Because a lot of the wing depend on that fish. You know, even that fish with the microinvertebrates that are under, when they whack their tail, it comes on. They feed up those. When all those start going, things are going to start dying. So we have to really take care of Mother Earth and its belongings in all parts of our survival. Water, air, fire, and land base. You know, we have to take care of it all. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, today in this climate change, you know, we see all these changes. But I remember way back then in the stories, because I've been doing what I'm doing for over 5 decades now. And listening to the older guys when they said it happened at that time and this is what they did, those stories need to come back.
Well, Brophy, it's been a complete honor to talk to you as always. I feel like, you know, we got to have you back on as a guest. I mean, there's just so much to unpack. And I always learn so much every time I listen to you. And I'm so grateful for, you know, KSuave Radio to host this show and have an opportunity really to talk about the confluence of culture and history and traditions and how it's rooted in the land and the water and the wildlife. And I just wanted to leave our listeners with that idea that the animals are our teachers, but we have to be their voices.
Yep.
That it's important for us. Nowadays, whether that's socially or politically or economically, to be the voice of the land and the water and the wildlife.
Yeah.
So, Brophy, really grateful for you. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Thank you for all you're doing to protect Chaco Canyon, Caja del Rio, Pecos, all these areas that are so iconic but so important to New Mexico's culture and history and traditions, and to the United States and to the world's history and cultures and traditions. So really grateful to you, Brophy.
Yes.
Thank you.
And thank you, too. You know, like Earth people, we belong together, man. We got to work on these issues together because as a whole, that's where we're doers, man. We got to do our job, and that's what we do, and that's what we do best. Thank you.
I love it. I think that's so important in a noisy, often divided, you know, clamoring society. That idea of unity and coming together and being one as a people is so important. Well, thank you for capturing the spirit of Earth Keepers and you know, being one of our spiritual and cultural advisors for Earth Keepers and for Flower Hill, and just doing what you do and being who you are.